at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Here we go! It's the best soccer show. Jason Davis, Jared Dubois. I feel like I'm very hot, Jared. In many different ways.
You so are.
Am I hot? Am I hot?
My eyes are burning up.
We are here live on a Sunday evening post-USA qualification for the World Cup. Post-draw for the World Cup. So much to talk about. Your boy is in Pensacola, Florida. Well, it's not technically Pensacola, but let's just call it Pensacola, Florida. Visiting family, hence the lack of my normal background or the good microphone. Jared, live from where is that? Where are you coming from, Jared?
The Batcave.
Parts unknown, undisclosed location.
I do not trust any of you with that information.
I'm excited for this one. Now, the reason for me to do a show on vacation is because the United States men's national team qualified. And Jared, what is it that we say? Have we refined this? What is it that we say?
The U.S. Men's national team has never missed a World Cup when the best soccer show was on the air.
That is exactly. Now, it's wordy, I understand. But if you want to get the concept across, that's what you got to say. Every time the U.S. has qualified since we came on the air, I already butchered it. When we're on the air, the U.S. doesn't fail to qualify for the World Cup. How about that? Right?
Fail is a great way to say something.
I mean, okay. So I'm telling you, it gets wild with the wording, but nevertheless.
The U.S. never missed a World Cup with the best soccer shows on the air.
Okay, Jared said it. It's right there. The United States is back in the World Cup for the first time since 2014. On this program, I think we can do a couple of things. We're going to talk about the draw. We're going to do that pretty much out of the gates here and go through what's facing the Americans when they get to Qatar?
Qatar is what I'm saying. I mean, feel free to correct me, people. I'll be that American that gets it wrong, but Qatar. I get used to it. You're going to hear it a lot from me.
Let's go with Qatar. The United States going in November. They'll play on the first day of the World Cup, which is certainly interesting. We're also going to go through all of our favorite moments, 10 of them, from World Cup qualifying for the United States. Now, look, obviously, the fact they qualified means we get to go back and look on this fondly. Some of these are not the best, like some of these aren't good moments, Jared. We're not talking about fun times in every case. It was a journey. It was up and down. It was, it required a lot of effort in trying to put a team together, trying to get to play together, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we didn't just pick the 10 funnest moments. We picked 10 most memorable moments from the World Cup qualifying process, right? And we actually put it to a vote with our besties on the Patreon, patreon.com/thebestsoccershow. We got MVP of the qualifying process. We've got newcomer, like a player who didn't have very many caps coming into qualifying who made a big contribution. What else we throw in there, Jared?
Oh, man. I think it was swaggiest moment or something like
swaggiest
that.
Swaggiest player, maybe.
Nick knows them all. I'm not sure if we have Nick on here, but if he wants to come on and do it. But he knows them all. He put it together for us. Shout out to Nick, Nicky Soup and Salad, Nicky Soup and Sausage, Nicky Soup and Super Bowl. He's done a lot of stuff for us this year. And
Nicky Soup and Softball. That's a new one I just
that
came
is
up with.
For the next couple months. I hear that's what it is. He's coming in hot off a softball game right now. He barely made it tonight, folks.
Not playing, watching. Playing, traveling with his daughter. Your daughter killing it in softball, like state ranked this team in softball in Ohio. So just know it's serious business. Yeah, we'll throw Nicky Soup and softball on the show or later when we get into the survey, whatever we want to call it, the voting for those things. So let's talk about the draw, Jared, because you know, look, we didn't have to wait. Right, we qualified on Wednesday. We get a draw on Friday. We didn't have any time.
Instant, I don't know. It's like instant. I felt like, oh, I can take a breath now. Qualifying's done. It's like boom. No, you need to think about this for the next 8 months, right here. This is what you need to think about. But I kind of liked it too. It was like okay, let's continue this experience a little bit.
So the before times are hard to remember. You remember Mad Max when he finds those kids and they have their own little society and they have like the viewfinder and they're like
and there's like
Neverland.
A plane drawn on the cave wall crashing and stuff.
Yeah, and the captain is their god or whatever. Yes. I kind of feel like the before times with soccer is like that, where I barely remember how we did it before. So when we qualified in previous World Cups, I remember the draw being in December. Is that right? December ahead of a summer World Cup, yeah?
That is correct. And usually it had something to do with Sepp Blatter giving him money and certain balls would be in the right pots.
Sepp Blatter's balls are not something I'm talking about tonight. Mm. So we're talking about Gianni Infantino's balls, maybe. Yeah, I guess is the difference here. But,
they're red.
But that would mean that we still had, you know, 7 months between the draw and the tournament. So it's similar in that way. But I guess it's just because
the last qualifiers. Oh, they were always done by the time the draw happened, right? You knew exactly who was in your group. We weren't waiting for.
So.
That's a weird thing. Like, why did we have to do this so far in front of the June fixtures for the last qualifying spots? What was unique needing to do it now?
I think before you did know who was going to be in the tournament. The whole field was filled out, and you had 7 months because it's about friendlies and preparation, right? It's about trying to get ready for the tournament, and these teams want to know who they are going to be facing to try to replicate. Like, for example, Mexico was lining up a friendly against Argentina in SoCal, and they killed it because they're in the same group at the World Cup. So they don't want to do that now. They're going to go play.
You're going to know what teams are on TV, what days and stuff like that. There's marketing that has to be done. Like, for example, you're going to have to let everyone in America know that the day after Thanksgiving is USA versus England, not to get in front of all this, but that's a big deal. And I think you should start marketing it now. So it would just be nice to know the full draw for our group.
Not Black Friday, Hate England Friday, right? Those stinking Anglos Friday, whatever. How close to a line of discrimination.
Weird. I mean, you could call it Secession Friday, but that has some bad tones these days, you know.
You could call that Revolutionary Friday, something like that.
Yeah, but January 6th messed a lot of stuff up for us, man. All the fun that came with that stuff.
Down with the queen. The queen must die. Okay, see, this is where the line
geez,
is. Oh, right?
Jeez, yeah. She's already out of the palace, dude. What do you want someone to do to her?
Am I going
to
get attacked by, like, the Secret Service or something? Or the
I don't know, British but I think most Service? Brits don't care. But
all right, so first of all, I'm a little confused. And again, out of pocket with some travel with this weekend. But I'm a little confused. Are we set on all the match times being 2 p.m. Eastern? Have I heard that? Is that the case?
I don't know. I've heard that they're fairly beneficial to us, though, in terms of time frame, if you have the days off. I think Nick's got the information.
Can we
right
bring
there.
Nicky Soup and Softball on the show? There he is. There he is. There's the man.
Tell we don't have the drop.
Oh, yeah. We don't have the board.
I don't have the board. I'm in Pensacola. What do you want me to do?
Our man JTT broke that news on Friday last week. About
another drop.
All those
have.
Games being at 2 p.m.
You want to recreate that one? I
oh my God, it's JTT!
Oh my God, it's JTT! All right, go ahead.
So, yeah, they're all going to be at the same time. All three fixtures in the World Cup for the U.S. are going
to
be.
Is that pandering to an American audience? Because I was like, at first, 100%. The draw happened and it was like, oh, there's going to be one at 5 a.m., there's going to be one at 11 a.m., there's going to be one at 3. Now, all of a sudden, all of
and
our
I'm 100% okay with this because you're literally marketing to the audience that 4 years from now you want to show up for games, for tickets.
A good point. Well, I don't think there's going to be a problem with that. I think it was Stephen Goff that reported that Americans, and look, again, Americans cheer for a lot of different countries. It's not they're not just going to support the U.S. men's national team, but Americans have already bought the most tickets for Qatar. Like, that's a thing that's happening right now, and that's what we do. We are not a soccer country, but we are a soccer country. We're just not a soccer country that goes in one direction altogether.
We are rich enough that there's still enough rich people that are soccer fans to still be the number one soccer audience at World Cups. That's how much embarrassing wealth we have.
Okay, let's walk through the three games and in order of when they will be happening at the group stage of the World Cup. And again, we open up the tournament. The day of the first day of the tournament, the United States plays. Now they'll play the winner of that European playoff. So it says Wales, because Wales is already in the European playoff final, or Scotland/Ukraine, because Scotland and Ukraine have to play. Do we know when that game is happening? Because obviously there's
stuff
going on.
I just know it's in June. I don't know when in June.
Well, no, not
the
final playoff match.
Oh, the second.
Scotland and Ukraine?
Oh, Scotland and Ukraine. Yeah, I don't know where that one is. I'm sorry.
That's the one I'm confused about as to when we get that game.
There's no chance it's going to be Scotland, though, right? Even though we all want it to be, it's not going to be Scotland.
Well, so which one?
Ukraine's got all this fight for our country kind of thing going on right now. Yeah. They got so much patriotism inside them.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be the team. Even though I think Wales is probably the best of those three teams, I think it's probably going to be Ukraine pushing through. Just because, how can you
Wales
not?
Is probably the best.
Their defense is impenetrable. I don't know if you've seen it on the news or not.
Oh, my God. Now I need a drop. I wish I had it. Do you think that playing – so, look, it's not that the Ukrainians are going to be a complete mystery, but do you think there's some benefit for the Americans to play either Scotland or Wales because, you know, you're going to know those players. They're pretty much – I mean, the best of Scotland's players are playing in England. They got a sprinkling of Scottish-based players, no doubt. Yeah. But pretty much all of all the Welsh players are playing in England or a couple of Welsh clubs in the English system. So they're either in the Premier League or the Championship, or they're Gareth Bale playing golf in Madrid and then coming onto the field for Wales and hitting
bangers. Still balling somehow.
I mean, the guy is insane. So do you think there's a benefit in playing the British Isles team? Essentially, one of those two over.
Yeah,
Ukraine?
I think there's definitely like I said, I'm not trying to overhype it. I think the Ukraine game is a trap game, if that sense of good, because like, how do you compete with what they're feeling inside? If that's still the situation we're in come December, but for me, I would much rather prefer the Wales or the Scotland matchup. Obviously, Scotland, because that's probably the easier of the two. But Wales,
they're not going to be pushover. I just want to make sure it's clear. But no, we're not saying
of those three, which one would you rather have?
Scotland is the team.
Okay,
that's all I'm saying.
When it comes to Wales, Wales is a team of a few very good players, but maybe not the most comprehensive team. But players that can take over the game if necessary, you know, and I think there is a benefit to playing Wales or Scotland because a lot of the players on the U.S. men's national team are going to have familiarity with them. I bet you 20 of the 23 people that we would put together for a roster for the USA couldn't name one Iranian player.
That might be true. Now, there's already an interview, and I think it probably came out of the draw, although I don't know when these things happen in time, but Berhalter is certainly not looking past Iran. And we'll get to Iran in a second because that's the final group stage match. I don't want to jump ahead, but I do see your point, right? That there's the familiarity factor. Even if you're like, oh, yeah, I kind of know that Iran's the best team in Asia and we're going to qualify, you might not know their players intimately. And there aren't a lot of them. There are a lot of them playing within Iran, but there's a smattering playing outside the country. So there's not, but it's not nearly like Wales or Scotland, right? You're going to have a complete, or even Ukraine. You're going to have a better understanding of those teams, at least the top level of their talent, versus Iran, whose top level talent could be playing in Iran for the most part, right?
And I think Nicky's got a graphic for us here. What you got there, Nick?
So this is from the BBC website. This is an article that states that the match between Scotland and Ukraine is likely to go ahead in June, according to a Ukrainian football expert.
So they're going to play that. Then that means they're going to probably try to do it like they're doing it with the AFC playoff match between Australia and UAE, because the winner of that game goes on to play Peru in one of those intercontinental playoffs, right? And those two games are happening a week apart. The UAE Australia game.
What an advantage for the team that's already in, though, to rest and not to play two games in a week.
I would think so, but you also get if you are playing in, and so at least in terms of the Asian playoff, I don't know where the Scotland UK match will be.
These players are out of season, so maybe it is better to get a game in beforehand to get some minutes. I'm not sure how that's going to look.
One part of this article that I'm reading a little closer here, and a reason why this game has not been rescheduled or played, is that many of Ukraine's top international players play in their domestic leagues.
Right,
and all men aged between 18 and 60 have been banned from leaving the country under its martial law rules.
Right. Right, you can't even get out of the country if you're able to fight, and if you are a footballer, you're probably able to fight, right? You're in tip top shape, so it makes it really difficult. And somebody in the chat, and I think I don't know who it was, said they don't actually think that game's going to be, because when you play it, right, and the war's not going to stop by June, and you know, as much as we wish that was the case,
could be something where Zelensky's like, hey, for the patriotism of the country, for something for us to rally around, we are going to release these guys and let these guys leave the country to go represent us. So there's something positive for the country to
that,
root for.
That could be a move. Now we're ranging into politics, and I don't think that's our space.
I think it's okay to talk about that, you know, I mean, especially since Russia can't participate. I mean, it's a nice another thing to kind of put over someone's head, you know?
Yeah, by the way, did you see that Russia is like, what were they bidding on hosting? They were bidding on hosting something. And it's like, dude, what the hell? What are you talking about hosting?
International snooker? Like, what
do
they got left?
I don't know what it was. It was wild. All right, so it is one of those three countries, and it's really hard to know what to say about the opening game. Although, Jared, regardless of whether it's Wales, Scotland, or Ukraine, with England and Iran coming up, and probably by match day three, things will have been sorted out a little bit in the group. that first game is now massive. Like, it's the game for the United States. And not because they can't beat England, but because the chances of beating England are smaller than they are beating Wales, Scotland, or Ukraine, right? So you are loading up for that. You would anyway. It's the opening game of the World Cup. You haven't been back there in 8 years.
First and third games are the most important here. But that being said, I'm going to ask you a question real quick. When the draw was going on, I'm assuming you watched it live. I don't know, but I'm assuming you watched it live.
On the air. I was doing the radio show.
So one eye on each kind of thing?
A radio show? Are you aware of that?
You do it from that room you're in right there?
No, not this one. Different room.
Look at that cat scratching post behind you. What's on that table right there?
I'm going to try to talk about this without
WNBC.
Nicky. I love you, Nick.
It's one of the few drops that Nick has access to, I think. You know how FIFA does this, right? They draw it out. There's like three different musical acts. They got to introduce everybody who's pulling balls out one by one, read their resume, do all this stuff, all the pomp and circumstances. At one point, the band or the group on stage is trying to pump up the crowd. Meanwhile, it's Qatar. So all of them are, sitting in these like incredibly relaxed chairs, like they're on a flight across the globe. I'm like, those people are.
But what I wanted to ask you is, obviously, everyone's first choice, you want to get in pot A. I mean, you want to get in group A because that's the Qatar group, right?
Yeah,
Stop playing like games. You know that's what you're rooting for the USA to be in group A, okay?
That's the worst thing about
it. Once it doesn't happen, was the group, what was the seeded team that you were most hoping the USA would get?
I know that they won a Euro in recent memory. 2016?
Portugal?
Yeah, I don't.
They're old.
Portugal. I don't. And I was thinking Portugal might be the nice one.
They barely made it in.
Yeah, they did.
But for me, Portugal was definitely probably number three. For me, it was England. I was down because here's what. England makes it very hard to live up their own expectations over and over again. Now, Euros aside, they had a really good Euros. But how many World Cups? Okay, but how many World Cups do you remember them actually achieving expectations in? You know,
they made a semifinal in 2018.
They did. But I feel like this team has so many more expectations on it after those two results that I kind of feel like, okay, we can get a chance with it. And also the players are so familiar with those players, the U.S. players. Like, I think we match up well. They are a fast young team. We are a fast young team as well. So I think there's a little bit – that's the one I wanted, to be honest with you. I didn't want Brazil. I didn't want Belgium.
No, definitely not Brazil, not Argentina. That's France. A dogfight. Not France, for sure. There's a thing about England where obviously part of it's just the relationship between the countries. And if you are a native English speaker, it's really hard not to be drawn in by the Premier League, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you are a soccer fan, you get drawn to the Premier League. You can't help it. And it's why, you know, obviously we know that Liga MX is the most popular league in the country, but in terms of people, you know, people, how do I say this? English speakers, generally speaking, are drawn to the Premier League, they have an advantage with that. Like, so, and obviously the Premier League is one of the best leagues in the world, if not the best.
The one thing Americans know is that soccer was created in England. That's the one thing they know.
Right. That's true. Maybe Scottish people tell you otherwise, but you kind of, everything gets funneled there. Right. And for a long time, where did we want our players to go, Jerry? Before the revelation that maybe the Bundesliga was a better place for our players to go, where did we want our players to play? What was the top of the mountain to represent them for America? The EPL. We wanted our players to go to England. So we have that, despite the fact that we're the giant superpower and the UK is now this, you know, sort of secondary player on the international stage. We have this cultural power as America. When it comes to soccer, we're the little brother. We always thought of ourselves as a little brother. And
Jesse Marsh is changing all that.
When you go into that relationship, it gets a little complicated. And I don't know. It's interesting now to see how that's all going to play out. And
that's a good point, too.
Yeah.
Jackie D put this. I've been thinking this for a while. If one of the British Isles teams makes it as well, you got two pasty-ass teams playing in the heat of Qatar against us. Weston McKinney grew up playing in the hot of Texas. Come on. He's ready for this.
What you're saying is that the diversity of the U.S.
What I'm saying is the white people are melting.
Okay.
Shout out to what? Go ahead.
Shout out to Fools Rush In from Jerry.
Great movie,
Dubois.
Man. Great movie. We may need that drop for Qatar.
People are melting. Yeah, we might. Okay. So it is one of those three countries, then England, obviously the day after Thanksgiving. you know, I saw somewhere it mentioned like everybody's got that day off. First of all, not everybody has that day off. Let's not.
It's a lot, though.
Know, a lot of people do, but yeah. You know, there's a lot of people who work jobs that.
But and not a lot of people want it on Thanksgiving because then everybody has it off, right? But then you're competing with those other traditional American sports. There is a hole right there where you get the best of both worlds. A good amount of the American population has the day off, and there's nothing competing against it. Like you just had an American holiday. It's the most American holiday there is. I don't know, July 4th, probably maybe a little bit more, but like this is our thing, right? The next day, these guys are going to have Thanksgiving in Qatar, going to be bonded. They're going to be ready to.
Did you see my tweet? I'm planning out my Black Friday already.
No,
I'm
going to
get up. I'm going to go get a great deal on a flat screen television. Then I'm going to watch the United States beat England. And then I'm going to make myself a leftover turkey sandwich. That's my plan for Black Friday, right?
And you're going to put like yellow French's mustard, none of that British crap, none of that brown mustard there.
No English cheddar cheese. I'm going with.
And you're going to have fries, not chips.
yeah, maybe. I mean, there's leftover sides. I'm doing the most American thing possible. I'm eating Thanksgiving food after Thanksgiving. There's nothing more American. And I got a good deal on a TV, right? We've exported Black Friday. That's a good thing.
Let me ask you a question. Let's assume Wales gets the spot. Do you think England is most worried about the USA matchup or the Wales matchup?
In terms of the quality of the teams?
Yeah, like which game do they find that they think is going to be the most difficult for them?
That the British press or Iran. The British press would be much more focused on the Welsh matchup than on the U.S. matchup, especially.
Okay, but do you think that's the harder matchup?
Do they think it deep down? Probably yes. I just don't think I don't think they know enough about the U.S. team,
and I don't think they
respect the U.S. player pool.
Cool,
I don't think so.
Yunus Musa is going to take a crap on him.
No, I've already seen. We're like a couple days into this, and I've already seen a comment on Twitter somewhere where somebody said, you know, the Mexican fans are defending the U.S. men's national team to the England fans, and the somebody else somewhere is defending Iran to American fans because Americans are disrespecting Iran. By the way, I'm not looking past Iran. I'm definitely not.
Was it Iran or Iraq that gave us a really, really gave us a loss, I think, in a World Cup a few years ago?
In 1998.
Was it Iran?
Iran beat the United States in 1998. Yes, that is when that happened. So, you know, there's storylines throughout. The Black Friday game is going to be massive. You know, I remember in 2010 when the United States opened with England at the World Cup in South Africa. Now, if I remember correctly, and I'm sure people in the chat will be able to back me up on this, I think Clint Dempsey barely dodged a red card in like the first minute of that game, throwing an elbow on a 50-50 air.
My man was ready to play.
Then obviously you have Rob Green, which is the story for the Americans. The Americans got picked apart once defensively. I think that was Gerard.
If I remember correctly, the Americans did not play poorly in that match.
They did not, but they had that one moment where they got, I think they maybe fell asleep a little bit off a throw-in or something like that.
Yeah, remember, this was a Jermaine Jones, Michael Bradley team. This was a made to not penetrate kind of.
Ooh, you want to play a quick little memory game with Jared Dubois?
Oh, who's on the field that day?
Yeah, kid, you think you can name the starting
line? Oh, wait, no, hold on. Don't look. Nick's going to be looking up. He's gesturing. He's going to do it. He'll come on, and then you and I can both see what we can get. We'll go back and forth naming
down.
Him.
Yeah. Close the chat down. Close the
chat down. Okay.
I got to pull it up. Hang on. Give me a second. While I pull up the page.
Well, definitely.
So what I think we do is we go back and forth naming one player until one of us gets one wrong.
Hold on. We're going to do it that way. Then I can't give – I was going to tip my hand on something then, but now I guess I won't. It was going to help you too, so now I'm going to hold that back.
So I got to be okay. This is 2014?
2010. This is 2010, dude. 2010,
yeah. Oh, you're right. You're right. Algeria. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Algeria was the last game. So we drew with
England. We should have beaten Slovenia. We got robbed on the Moadu set piece. That got called 2-2. Back. That was a draw. And then we beat Algeria with the last gasp goal. That was our tournament. Goal. Yes.
Okay. So you want to go first or you want to go second?
We topped the group with 5 points. Remember that. We topped the group with 5 points.
Which is poor.
We're playing a little Rastafari.
Yeah, we Rastafari, are. Man.
Let's do
you
it.
You want to go first or you want to go second?
I came up with the idea, so I feel like if I'm going to play, I should go first.
Go for it.
Okay. In that case, I'll say Landon Donovan. Just get him out of the way. I mean, that's probably not the move. The move is to probably go deeper, but I'm just going to say Landon Donovan. Be safe.
You're going Landon Donovan. Of course, I don't have the drop, but yes, he was on the field.
Okay.
I had the drop. I just got to find it.
Okay. Well, I just remembered that his distribution is brilliant, so I'm going to say Tim Howard.
All right.
Tim Howard. Yes, that is correct.
Timmy Howard. Well, like I said, he should have gotten a red card probably in the first couple minutes of that game. Clint Dempsey.
That is correct.
I will go with Carlos Bocanegra.
Okay.
Also correct.
Then in that case, I will go with Jay DeMeritt.
That's correct. Gotta be right. Okay.
Yes, because Gooch had gotten hurt in 09.
Yeah, that was DeMeritt and Bocanegra, that whole World Cup. They were great.
That's
back
right
there.
That's right.
All right, I'm going to go with Michael Bradley.
Michael Bradley.
Oh, he's got the ding.
Found the ding. All right. 2010 World Cup. Man. All right, hold on. Michael Bradley and
there's one position that's going to be very hard.
I'm not 100%. I'm going to say DeMarcus Beasley. I'm not 100% on that one.
You're just talking about on the field, correct?
Yes.
Starters.
DeMarcus Beasley was a substitute.
All
right, let's see how many more starters
the
I can get then.
Buzzer.
All right, That's fine. I've won. Okay, here's what the striker position is the messed up one because Charlie Davis has just gotten hurt.
I remember so who got added to the team.
I know there's one of three guys. I know it's one of three guys. It's either Hercules Gomez, Robbie Findlay.
Yes.
Or Edson Buttle. Or is it Eddie Johnson?
Yeah, I think he did go.
Edson Buttle or Eddie Johnson. One of those two.
Are you giving me a name?
No. If I'm going to pick a name again, the next one's Jermaine Jones. I can't believe you didn't go with the chalk.
Jermaine Jones wasn't in the team yet.
Not on the field.
He wasn't in the U.S. team yet.
He wasn't playing in 2010?
No, he was a 2014
player. Oh, he was Klinsmann. What am I thinking? He was Klinsmann.
Yeah, he was a Klinsmann guy. So we're both out.
I have a lock
I should have said. Dang it. My bad.
I think Herc started that game. I'm going to say Herc.
I was going to go with Robbie Findlay.
Hercules not in the game.
I'm gonna go with Steve Cherundolo.
Steve Cherundolo.
Oh, yeah, that's a good move. That's a good move.
The left back is a hard position. That's a hard position, man. I think it might have been Bornstein, dude.
It might have been. Yeah, you might have been right. He did. Bornstein scored the winner against Costa Rica to give us the first place in the hex the year before.
Was it Bornstein, Nick, at left back?
No.
Wow. Okay. So who else was at left back?
Was it Spector at left back?
No,
he would play right back anyway because he's a right-footed player.
Man, who else would it be if it's not who are we missing?
That's
over
why I went
there
to Marcus because I couldn't remember who played left back.
Who is it, Nick?
Who is the left back?
I'm trying to think. I'm looking at this roster.
Okay, so we still have a midfielder we're missing right now, right?
No. Yeah. Well, I know Rico Clark played in that tournament. I just don't remember if he started that game.
You said DeMeritt already, right?
Yeah, I'll say Rico Clark.
You said Cherundolo.
Yeah. Yes. We said Bocanegra. Who's the left back for that tournament? Unless they played three. They didn't play three.
No, they definitely didn't play three.
There should only be two names left. There should only be two names left.
It was a 4-4-2. In fact, they played two forwards.
There's only one name left? What is it?
What?
Are you talking about the back four?
Yeah, who is it?
You guys haven't said Gooch.
Gooch was in the game.
Oh, Bocanegra played left back.
Oh, that's what it was. That's why we got thrown.
Oh, that's why we couldn't get there.
Gooch had come back from his injury already?
Yeah, I guess so. So Bocanegra played left back. I forgot he played left back as well.
You know what? Maybe I'm remembering this where that was a rush for Gooch to come back, and there was a question of whether or not he should have started at the World Cup or been on the team.
And you didn't confirm the striker. Was it Robbie Findlay?
There would have been two, by the way.
There were two.
Yeah.
Oh, it was two? Okay.
Because he played a 4-4-2.
I didn't know if Donovan or Ben Dempsey had played striker. I wasn't sure if they both played midfield or if one of them was playing striker that game.
Based on what I'm seeing here, I don't believe Dempsey was playing striker.
Okay, yeah, so your midfield was Bradley, Dempsey, Donovan. We're still missing a center midfielder because I said Jermaine Jones. That was too early.
I said Rico Clark.
But you said not in that game, not that you said. Cause
Jason, are you going with Rico?
Yeah, sure. I'm not. Okay. Rico was in that. That's what I said. Rico was in that. So
and
Rico
you were wrong on Herc, and I was wrong on Robbie Findlay?
Yes.
Okay, then.
I didn't say you were wrong on Robbie Findlay.
Oh, then I'm saying Robbie Findlay.
Okay. So
the strike partner then is Edson Buttle? Is Edson Buttle? Because he was playing at Eintracht Frankfurt or something that their Energy Coppa. So he was playing in Germany, I think, at that point. And I think he made it on.
Yeah, let's go with Edson. Was it Edson?
Edson came on for Robbie Findlay.
Oh, came on. Okay, so there's a different starter striker?
There's one more striker.
Who are we missing, dude? Like, what's another striker that
we're
missing?
Can't believe we're not
seeing Connor Casey?
Was it McBride? Was it McBride still?
No.
Nope.
Charlie Davies wasn't around. He was off.
Josie would have been 19. Was it Josie?
No. Oh, it was Josie?
It was Josie.
Man.
Now, who came on for Josie?
Oh, that'd be Herc.
Probably came on for Josie.
It was not Herc.
No?
Who else was in there? Connor Casey was around that time.
He didn't even go to the World Cup, I don't think. I don't think Connor Casey made
it. Agudelo?
It's not Agudelo. Would you like a hint?
Yes, yeah. Give us a hint.
I think you could maybe consider him a dual international or dual national.
Dual national
striker. Germany would be the dual national. Is it Germany? Is the dual national?
Not Germany.
Canada. Till Bunbury.
It's not Aaron Johansson, is it?
It is not.
Okay.
Mixed disc.
That's too early. It's not. No, it's not that position.
What are the dual nationals
say
going
known
with
for having a bit of an injury history?
It's not John O'Brien.
What are we doing here?
I think you got to get it to us at this point.
I would say has had a bigger career in America post soccer.
Stuart Holden.
Oh, he didn't play striker.
Oh, he didn't play striker, but he came on for him. Yeah, okay, got it. Yeah, okay, yeah. Got it.
All right, Stu. Okay. Yeah, I knew Stu was.
Those were the only two subs. That
he only used two subs in that game.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. I see you. Bob.
Hey, you got the result.
Sure, he did. All right, so anything else to say about the draw before we move forward here?
By the way, people were screaming Josie in the chat now that I'm looking at the chat.
I mean, I don't know why I didn't say his name. I remember him scoring at the Confederations Cup. I guess he would have naturally been.
The Bukarnica left back thing messed me up, dude. Dang it.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I did forget about that. That tells you where the left back options were. Boca wasn't a bad left back, but he wasn't a fleet of foot. Left back either.
Such an aerial threat, though, on set pieces. Yeah. Love that.
All right, so it's going to be, again, Wales, Scotland, Ukraine, England on Black Friday. Then you go into the Iranian matchup on, I think it's a Tuesday.
I believe so.
That sounds right. Now, look, again, there could be everything to play for against Iran. And who knows? Like, if the U.S. has managed to get, let's say they
have 3 points for the first one, I think you go pragmatic for the England game.
Do you? Okay, so you rotate a bit for England?
Maybe a couple of key positions. Like maybe Tyler Adams doesn't play the England game.
Ooh, I don't know, man. That's interesting.
I guess he can do all three, though. You know,
he probably could. He's got all three. Look, we just got an example of how Berhalter played three games he wanted to win in a very tight window. And you're actually going to have a little bit more of a gap between these games.
I guess like that, though. If he gets six, if he had gotten six in this window, the last game would have looked different. If he gets six in the World Cup, the last game that would look different.
If you got six out of those first two games, you don't have to do anything against Iran. Yeah, you don't have to stretch yourself out. You're going to be making it into the next round. And you're probably winning the group at that point.
Yeah.
Depending. So I obviously it's going to depend on how things go in the other game, each one of those days, sort of how you feel coming out of the match. I think, like, you go for it in the first one. You get 3 points and you set yourself up because really you only probably need 1 point out of the next two games to qualify for the knockout rounds, right? That's how we got through in 2014.
And listen, if I'm a U.S. fan, which I am, the Nations League, the friendlies this summer, I want to see offense, man. I know that we can play defense. I know that we can grind out a shutout or a one goal game, but I'm still not sold on the offense. And part of that's because we haven't had all the pieces. I mean, I think in the Nations League, we're potentially going to have Aronson back. We're potentially going to have Weston McKennie back. And you're going to probably have Gio back.
Like, I mean, look, if you have – I know nobody knows what it's going to look like come November, Jared, when he's picking his team, or October, late October, whatever. But if you have Gio healthy, Pulisic healthy, Adams healthy, McKennie healthy, Reyna healthy, then, yeah, put them all on the field. We haven't seen it, right? We haven't seen that.
I still think we haven't had Gio, Pulisic, McKennie, and Adams on the field at the same time. I still think that it hasn't happened.
No, hasn't happened.
That's amazing.
There's a combination of players where they've had 10 minutes together. And include Dest in there too. Right? Throw Dest in there because he's definitely in our upper echelon of talent.
Yeah.
So there's that. Okay. So the World Cup draw, we now have the next 7 months to sweat it out, to think about the draw and all the permutations, to watch the friendlies, the Nations League, and everything else. Berhalter says he's bringing the best team possible to the Nations League because we got to roll them out there and see what they can do out of the World Cup.
You got to play them. Great. Yeah.
That's looking forward. Let's look back at this qualifying process, Jared. The campaign we just went through.
You set it up like a professional. I love you.
The roller coaster one has played out. What's another good analogy for what we went through? Because there was a young relationship level, right?
I would say pregnancy scare.
No, that's not. That's a little bit. It's a little bit too one? Far. Possibly. I don't want to.
You ever made it through one and been like, whew.
What, you're saying that it would be bad to bring a new life into this world? Is that what you're telling me?
There are times in my life where bringing a life into this world wouldn't have been a positive thing for that life.
Yeah.
Okay, sweat out an STD test. You're more familiar with that.
Okay, whoa.
Oh,
whoa.
I don't know.
I was going to say, it's like, make it modern, right? You get into an Uber.
Damn, dog, that's in a props.
Maybe you come back from a trip. I know you don't like to travel, but occasionally they make you get on an airplane and go places. Yeah. You come back from a trip. You land at the airport. You call the Uber. You get in the Uber. You're looking at your phone. Maybe you're checking up on emails. You're tweeting, whatever you do. I don't know what you do. You're watching disc golf videos. You're watching disc golf videos on your phone. And you look up and you realize, I don't know where I am. What neighborhood is this? Where are we going? Is my Uber driver about to take me into...
Luckily, I might. It's a very short Uber drive from the airport to my house.
Okay,
don't
ruin my analogy.
You're so spot on.
I'm saying, like, you just don't know, and then you're like, oh my god, am I gonna
die? So it was something like a roller coaster qualifying campaign, and so what you're asking is, what are the parts of the roller coaster you remember? Do you remember the loop de loop? Do you remember the tick 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 tick? Do you remember the first drop? What do you most remember about
that? The trepidation going up the hill before you hit that drop.
Do you remember the look as she told you that it's negative?
Wait, so what, you were doing this in person? These were always tests you were confirming in person? some. How many are we talking about?
Your boy was stupid back in the day.
Okay, wow. They make something for that. We'll explain that afterwards. So let's go through. We picked out 10 moments, and people are going to throw theirs out in the chat. We're absolutely going to get to any that we missed here. Do you want to do this 10 to 1? We're doing this a countdown style. That's how you got to do this, right?
Sure.
Casey Kasem, countdown. Who does the top 40 now?
It's probably Ryan Seacrest, right?
Ryan Seacrest, right?
Dig it over from Rick Dees.
Nobody. Rick Dees used to do it?
I think
after
so.
After Casey Kasem died?
Maybe he never did. I don't know.
Shadow Stevens.
The announcer of all Shadow Squad games.
That's right, Shadow Stevens. All right, so we've got our top 10. We're going to ask you to throw yours. All right, number 10 on the list. What did we go with for number 10 on the list, Jared? What's the...
We went with the overall theme. Now, this is the one thing that's not a moment. It's more of a thing that was constant through the qualifying that is very memorable to us. Number 10 spot, so definitely not the highest thing, but just the overall Berhalter out aspect of this qualifying. What that meant.
Of the criticism on Greg.
How early it happened and how in the end he got the job done. Like the Berhalter out thing was something that was an underlying theme through all of qualifying because it just didn't go as smooth as everyone wanted it to go.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, look, that is still, it's still not everybody's 100% convinced, right?
And if you're be honest, he's, like his players, he was going through this for the first time as a coach, you know, and I think he learned as it went along as well. I think his picks got better in the windows as the windows got towards the end. I think, didn't you find that more and more your 23, 26 was lining up with what his 26 was going to be more so than it was early in the windows and definitely more with the starting 11s?
I think that's about data. That's about information, right? We had a track record for some of these players. We knew what they were capable of. We had seen them in World Cup qualifying. We had seen them in certain moments. And so we're working with information that we didn't have, just like Berhalter was working with information that he did not have when he started the qualifying process. I mean, there's a couple of names just to drive this home. That were in the, you know, that were involved in the beginning of qualifying, who disappeared and never came back.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking about John Brooks. We'll get to him in a second. There are guys that maybe Sam weren't Ives. Part of it in the beginning that showed up towards the end because Berhalter suddenly had a need in that position, or
Shaq Moore,
that player's particular body of work for his club team gave him a real argument. Luca Della Torre is a perfect example of that, right? Yeah. And I know there are plenty of people who say, well, Greg Berhalter should have called up Luca Della Torre when qualifying started. And maybe he should have, right? That's certainly an argument. And maybe why you don't believe in Greg.
It's hard to workshop in a game that means a lot. You know, it's tough to workshop because he wasn't. And here's the thing. And forgive me if I'm wrong. I think Della Torre and Greg Berhalter both agreed not to bring him in for the Gold Cup. I think Luca was trying to cement his season to start with Heracles. I don't know how you say it. How do you say it?
Her- Heracles. Yeah, Heracles. Just like that. Good job. Yeah.
So if we're to believe what we've heard, that was a mutual decision. He wanted to start a season off right, didn't want to come to the Gold Cup. Maybe he paid for that in the first few windows.
Yeah, it's possible. So Berhalter out, a theme across the entirety of World Cup qualifying. Here we are qualified, many people still not 100% convinced. Number nine, Mr. Dubois. What's number nine on our list?
Number nine, Jedi's backflip / fake injury celebration. Like I said, obviously, it doesn't have to be a huge one. It's just, what do you remember? Yeah, and that's a mean moment. He got me.
It absolutely is. In a world when that video gets played a billion times by my national team fans afterwards, 100%. And we came on the air. We did our show after that match, and I think you were like, oh my God.
I thought he did his Achilles right then.
And you didn't know at the moment. I don't think after the show you were still like, did he get hurt? Because I don't think it was clear that he was faking it. And it was, first of all, dude, like, why are you doing that in like 25 degree weather in Columbus, freaking us out? Because, you know,
because he's 22 and his body can do anything.
Jedi Robinson. By the way, we could actually throw in here the transition, which, I pretty much made it, even though I'm not 100% sold. But the transition from Anthony to Jedi, like, we've bought into his naming himself Jedi. People started doing that, right?
And that's 400% a part attributed to Andres on CBS Sports. Like, he he went with it, dude. He full on was the first guy that was just, every time, I'm just calling him that. Put on him,
and
dude.
It came out in some press conference that Robinson did where he said, no one calls me Anthony. I don't even know. There's nobody in my life that calls me that. I've always been Jedi since I was 4 years old.
Just like
said.
At some point, John Anthony Brooks became John Brooks and Michael Roscoe Fiscal became Michael Fiscal. We don't know when these things happen. We don't know how they happen. Sibachu became PFOC.
He became Michael Orozco, not Michael Fiscal.
Oh, my bad.
Thank you. Yeah, you got it wrong, but there you go. Yeah, that transition is kind of in the mix. All right, that's number nine. Number eight. We just threw the actual act of qualifying in at number eight. I know, look, that's probably the biggest and most important thing, clearly. By the way, shout out to Morgan who made this graphic. I'm going to guess that's supposed to look like the World Cup trophy.
Oh, I totally 100% got that when I saw it.
I'm just making sure I'm on board with this.
And here's the thing. Like, it's number eight because it was kind of like, do I pop a bottle of champagne or do I not pop a bottle of champagne? It's like, well, to qualify on a loss kind of sucks. Third place.
Just say, it is interesting to see these young men, many of them extremely young, some of them not even eligible to drink in this country, but they could drink in Costa Rica because it's 18 down there. I didn't see any bottles in hands that were
throwing back some Imperials.
I think they were very conscious of that over at U.S. Soccer. But the
older, I saw Bud Lights.
No, I saw Kellen Acosta and Tyler Adams and a couple other. You saw Bud Light.
You're right. I saw Tyler Adams with Bud Light. I saw Tyler Adams with Bud Light. You're right.
And just look. I mean, again, not for me to judge, but I can only assume that these guys have been spending so much of their life playing soccer, staying in tip-top shape, not necessarily living the life we did at 21, 22, 23. They didn't look like they knew exactly how to hold that Bud Light, if you know what I'm saying. They didn't exactly look like
full of all five fingers on the can.
They didn't look super comfortable, you know, partying the way that maybe.
Now, is Weston McKinney 21?
He is above 21. He's older.
I would have loved to see him, how he holds a beer. You know, that dude's got style.
He would have done something.
I just want to see how he wore his goggles. I want to see what his hair looked like after beer got in it. Like, there's so many things that I want. Like, all I want is another reason for Weston McKennie to celebrate with his team. Because you know he and Tim Way are going to set the standard of how the team celebrates.
He definitely wanted to. There was no doubt about
that. Tim Way had his goggles on sideways, for God's sake. I can't rock that.
100% that Weston would have been either leading or involved seriously in the gritty on the plane, which was Yunus Musa, Giovanni Reyna, and I'm missing the third one. Can't remember who the third one was. Not Pulisic, because we know Pulisic gritty is an atrocious disaster. We probably should have thrown Pulisic dancing on this list. We didn't do that.
The worm.
We didn't throw the worm on here. Nevertheless, we move on. Qualifying number eight on the list. Number seven, Mr. Dubois.
Number seven is the Pulisic hat trick versus Panama not too long ago, just March 27th. And obviously two of them are penalties, but to have your guy that you rely on to come in big on a game that you needed to win after just missing a sitter the game before in Mexico, that speaks a lot about him, and the team responds to that.
Somebody dug up a tweet of mine from 2017. So think about where we were, and I think it was I don't remember if it was before or after the failure to qualify, but it was 2017. And there was a Dutch fan who had gotten the best Dutch team tattooed on his back. So it's a field with a lineup with names all over the field. And obviously Cruyff was on there. Koymans was on there. No, Dest was not on there. But I my tweet in 2017 was, serious question for the national team fans, would you put Pulisic on this tattoo if you got the same tattoo? Now, this was 2017.
So you're so asking, but he's got to take a position from someone.
What I'm saying.
Was the tattoo a 442 or 433? That matters.
No, it's your choice. Whatever your best national U.S. men's national team is. Whatever one you're making to, you know, put your formation out there. Whatever you want.
I don't think I would be put. I don't think I would have any active player on it because really? You don't know their full story.
That's
like
a good point.
I just think I would go with it. Like, what
if he certainly burns out? He's certainly a lot closer to being on that team in 2022.
There was a time where I played with Charlie Davies on there, for God's sake. You remember how hot he was and how good he was?
You wouldn't have done that.
At striker?
No, you wouldn't have done that. It's going to be McBride till you die until it's not McBride till you die, probably.
Yeah,
even
McBride
though Josie had
there.
More goals than McBride did as a national team player.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough thing to do, and that's a whole side conversation. So if you want to do that one day, we can do that on another show, but I don't want to hijack
again,
this.
Pulisic stepping up with the hat trick against Panama, helping lead the United States to three massive points, getting on the verge of qualifying, definitely becoming the guy at the penalty spot for the U.S. men's national team, 100%.
Let's just say there's probably a Reyna on that tattoo, but it's not Gio.
Okay, let's move on.
He's not done yet.
Yeah. Number six, we picked Sergiño Dest and his banger against Costa Rica way back
banger.
In October. October 13th. I don't have the old baby drop. I don't think
that might be the most clutch goal that a U.S. player had. We needed that. Can you think of another goal that we needed? Maybe Anthony Robinson that started the comeback down in Honduras.
Well, let's get to that. That's going to come up in a second.
But I just think that was just a banger goal when offense was struggling. Offense was struggling. And the fullbacks in this team have come through over and over and over again. Honestly, that should have been one of the themes. If we were just doing – that's not a moment. But honorable mention to fullback production in qualifying. Yep. That's a huge thing. And this is just another example of it with Sergiño Dest.
Yeah. And look, that's why, despite the fact that we've gone back and forth, is Sergiño Dest a good enough defender, et cetera, et cetera. If he's healthy, he should be on the field because he can do things like that. And we need that.
And I think Tim Weah is better. Tim Weah really combines well with him.
So Sergiño Dest against Costa Rica on October 13th is number six. Now we're into the top five. It's getting real. What you got for number five?
Number five is just the general fact that we played in Minnesota for some damn reason in the coldest weather ever and all the things that go along with it. Just February Minnesota's second. Number five.
Minnesota. Yeah. Shout out to Minnesota.
We got the frostbitten ears of Reggie Cannon. Is that Reggie Cannon had the frostbitten ears?
Yeah. Those things are swollen and not in a good way.
Is that Will Smith from behind?
Man, that is not good. So, it's not just, obviously, Reggie Cannon, Matt Turner. And we still have this ongoing controversy.
God. I don't care. It's not a controversy. It's subtle. Everyone, the information's out now. Only people with tinfoil hats want to keep talking about it.
Turner did say something that kind of placed blame for his injury on the Minnesota game because he was running around back and forth to try to stay warm. He again then came out with a second statement in which he clarified to say, well, it's actually not. It was the other foot, something. The other foot kept me out now, but I had tendonitis in that foot from that game, but that's not what kept me out. What kept me out is the other
fracture
foot.
In the other.
Yeah, I mean, jeez, come on. Whatever it is.
But that, listen, do you think U.S. ever does that again? Do you think USA ever does that again? Maybe Columbus or Cincinnati.
You want to ask me, like, will my toddler slam his head into the wall again? It's the same kind of thing. Of course he will, because he doesn't know any better. They're going to just run straight
forward.
No,
I've seen, will the U.S. ever play a game like that again?
No, that's what – because of changing and qualifying, the way that the tournament's going to work?
Not just that, but just like of the feedback and like the negativity that came out of that choice, both by players and the public.
But that's what I'm saying. My toddler doesn't understand that if he does something once and it hurts him, he shouldn't do it again. I don't believe that U.S. soccer is going to go, oh, that was a bad idea. We should never do that again. 100% believe that if they have the opportunity and they think it's beneficial to them, they will do it again. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. And by the way, Bruce Arena also threw gasoline on this thing by saying that Turner did have frostbite. So we're just, you know.
And let's not forget, too, that Bruce played two qualifiers in Columbus. I think he did the very first one. The very first qualifier, the first Dos Acero, that was under Bruce Arena, you know.
And that was freezing cold, but not quite that good.
No, no, not no. Listen, I get it. Like, to get an advantage, but don't, like, hurt your players. There's a difference. Yeah. And granted, when they picked that game, they had no idea what the temperature that day was going to be. It happened to be very bad. But the likelihood that was very high.
I think so. I think we all kind of knew there was some dumb stuff that's going to come out of that game. And sure enough, here we are. All right, number four, and this gets to Robinson's goal, which you talked about, and just needing it in that moment. Honduras comeback. Now, this also includes Ricardo Pepi's debut. He started that game, and obviously in the second half, Berhalter made some adjustments. The U.S. comes back from down 1-0 at halftime.
One of the biggest adjustments, Pulisic got injured and had to come out.
He did have to come out of that game. He'd been hacked all over the field. That's also the game that kind of sparked the, why does Pulisic need to do so much? He's taking too much on. He's, you know, there was a one moment in particular. I remember we talked about it after the game, where Pulisic is trying to beat three or four defenders along the touchline, basically at midfield. Ricardo Pepi breaks into space by himself. And all Pulisic has to do is play a decent ball leading him into that space. And Pepi is basically probably 1v1, although I don't remember exactly what the defensive situation was for Honduras. And Pulisic doesn't do that. He tries to dribble three players. He gets hacked down. He turns the ball over, and it goes the other way. And it might have even led to the Honduras goal. If I'm trying to remember how that happened. But there was a lot on Pulisic in that game. He comes out. Berhalter makes changes across the field. Pepi sets up the first goal for Jedi Robinson. Then Pepi himself scores his first goal for the U.S. men's national team, and we're off and running.
Yeah, so it was when the U.S. needed it most, because that was the height. To go back to our number 10, the height of Berhalter out was halftime at that game, because it had been bad result after bad result, and now you're losing on a game where you need to pick up points because you had just drawn Canada at home. Yeah. Yep. So you had to pick up points here, and the players bailed him out. You know, and listen, it was a good move by him too. He made some moves, Berhalter, in that game.
You know, talking about like alternate timelines and counterfactuals, it didn't happen this way. But if they had drawn that game,
would have
or lost that game, obviously, if they, it's very possible they were down 1-0 at halftime. If they don't get 3 points out of that game, and they're now on 2 or 3 points for that window, I mean, the Berhalter out cacophony would have been insane, and there really wouldn't be a lot of argument against it.
And
right?
Based on if all the other points are shaken out the same way, the USB punching a ticket to Qatar, but in June to play New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of different moments in there that could have changed qualifying. What if you beat Canada at home? They don't go into the final match day needing to you know, not lose by 6 goals to Costa Rica. They're probably already qualified if they get the same results along the way. And this is the other way around. If you don't come back against Honduras, you're obviously setting yourself up for maybe a playoff against New Zealand, or maybe just missing the tournament again coming into the last day, depending on what the goal differential was against Costa Rica and Panama, where Panama was and all of that. So come back against Honduras on September 8th with the U.S. down 1-0 at halftime. The 4 goals post-halftime changes, Pepi making his debut. Number three. You want to do number three?
Number three. And this is a memorable one, man. This got all of us. This is a positive one. This is a good feeling one. You remember that feeling when you saw Gio Reyna run through 5-6 guys and Mexican players? Yeah. You know, Gio.
Can I just say, for all the haters, and some of them were Mexican, and look, I know you were bitter about not beating us at home and whatever you want to say. I honestly, if he finishes that run, if he makes a pass that leads to a goal,
you're talking
if he
about
scores, it's blowing up everywhere. It's a different level. But if you, as a soccer fan, cannot appreciate what he did, even if it didn't lead to a finished product, if you cannot appreciate that, then get the hell out of here. Like, just quit on soccer, because you don't get it. Like, you don't understand where the joy comes from. There are only 2, 3 goals, 4 goals tops in a given in most games, right? We don't get a lot of goals. Scoring is not the point a lot of the time. The point is stuff like that. The point is the incredible pass. The point is the shot that hits the crossbar is one of our most exciting moments sometimes. The great save. Like, these things don't have to end in goals to be memorable. They don't have to end in goals to go up in a pantheon somewhere, right? Yeah. Especially considering the United States qualified. Now, if they hadn't qualified, Jared, we'd be looking at that moment in a different light. But we get to take joy out of it because they went to Costa Rica, or they went home and beat Panama, and they went to Costa Rica and did okay and didn't lose by 6. And we can say, oh, my God, what does that say about Gio Reyna's future? You were talking about there's a on your tattoo, on your U.S. great tattoo, that there's a Reyna, but it's not Gio. If he does that a couple of times more and scores a goal at the end of it, he might be on that tattoo.
Yeah, there's and also it's a reminder that yeah, we qualified third, tied with goal differential, but we did almost all of it without Gio Reyna. We lost him in the first game. Yeah. First game, you lose one of your best players. We did it without Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie for multiple games. You know, we did it without Serginho Dest in multiple games.
Do you think it's possible? Like, I know he showed some great moments, and he had connected with Haaland at Dortmund, and we were excited.
Yeah.
Do you think he somehow got better not playing? Is that possible?
I think the chip has gotten bigger on his shoulder.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I think that there's certain players where that weighs them down. There's certain players where it motivates them, and I think Gio Reyna's the latter.
You know how we talk about Cade Cowell having like teenage movie bad like guy energy.
Stranger Things, the guy, the bad dude from Stranger Things with the Trans Am. Yeah.
High school movie villain energy. Yeah. Gio's high school villain movie energy is off the charts. Like it's like three Cade Cowells. It's insane. That guy just kind of emanates this like he's. It's not that he's pissed off all the time. He's having fun, but he's having fun with an attitude. There's a shot of him when Pulisic kind of got into it a little bit in the game against Panama, I guess it was. Yeah. And there was that moment that was nearly kind of a
he's on the sideline.
Tyler Adams is pushing Pulisic back, right? We talked about who are you, Pulisic or are you Adams? Gio Reyna's on the sideline just cackling.
Oh, yeah. do you remember way back when Pulisic missed the chance in the finals of the Champions League and the U.S. national team was meeting up? And there's footage of Gio smiling when he missed. Smile. Now, Gio's also a Man City fan because his dad laid there. But, like, there's a different breed in Gio. He's a different breed, dude, and I just want to see more of it, man. That's why he's our number three, just because the joy of that moment, man.
I think that's pretty cool. All right, so number three is Gio's run at the Azteca. Number two, where are we at? We kind of combined a couple things here.
Yeah, we have a 2A and 2B here because they're both part of the same thing. So 2A would be the man in the mirror moment with Christian Pulisic, and 2B being the Dos Aceros overall in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know,
anytime there's a Dos Aceros.
Pulisic coming off the bench, getting on into that way across, giving the U.S. a lead. Obviously, Weston, you see him there with the second goal, the Dos Aceros. That whole thing had like graduation vibes. I know we hadn't qualified yet, but it felt like this team had come together in a way they hadn't before. Now, look, they're not going to be threats to make the semifinals of the World Cup and or something until they do that consistently. And they do it against somebody other than Mexico because you got to get up for other teams. And the U.S. always gets up for Mexico, Jared. Mexico and the United States have the same sort of problem, right? That we tend to play down to our competition.
Yep.
So if the U.S. can play up the next level like they did against Mexico, that's great. And then, yeah, look, I don't know that we've had some great moments in the rivalry, right? You had Gucci stare down a Borghetti. You had, the bloody... But Brian McBride getting bloodied and having to come off
Marquez's boot and Kobe Jones' chest.
You have that one. You have even in friendlies, right? Remember
Alexi Lawes getting hit in the balls.
He did have that one. Landon scoring a goal in Phoenix when I don't remember who the keeper was for Mexico at the time.
But then he's waving Eddie Johnson to keep running because Eddie Johnson's like, "Oh, you got this." He's like, "No, I need your dummy run."
Tried to wipe out Eddie Johnson. The Mexican goalkeeper tried to wipe out Eddie Johnson on the back end of that. Yeah. I mean, just there are lots and lots of moments. Obviously, in South Korea, let's put that one up there, right? Beating Mexico. But to have it set up that way and to have it be Memo Ochoa, who I respect a lot, but just want to really hate. Like, I want to hate Memo Ochoa.
How can you be popular with hair like that?
I mean, it actually is like that inverse thing. He's popular. His hair doesn't make him popular, but he can pull it off. So it
burns. He's got he's got really big Sideshow Bob vibes, dude.
You think so? Because I think he's an incredible goalkeeper, though.
I'm not saying he isn't, but his hair's got Sideshow Bob vibes.
So he says what he says about the United
States. Osvaldo Sanchez, thanks for the chat.
It was Osvaldo Sanchez in that friendly in Phoenix. He says what he says. Again, the story is that I think it's Timmy Weah, somebody like that, who says, "Hey, right man on the mirror on your shirt." And again, Pulisic didn't start that game. He had just come back from injury, so he was only a substitute. He comes off the bench. He gets on the end of the cross, and it's not – I wanted it to be a little bit more of – like it's so – you even the picture. Can we put the picture back up there, Nick? Let's take a look at the picture because he kind of – like this, his form on the shirt reveal is not – It's not the best, right?
They got these guys wearing so much skin-tight stuff these days.
I know, right? It would be easier if he could, like, lift it all the way up.
It's like that scene in Friends where, like, Ross has the leather pants and he's sweaty and he smacks himself in the face when his hand comes off.
Okay, so that one, the Dos Acero and the Man in the Mirror moment are together at number two.
Now, I thought of one while we've been doing this, and we didn't think of it ahead of time, so I'm going to give an honorable mention here before we get to number one.
What's that?
And we don't have the drop, but the saucing him up, hit him, what?
We could say that
as a moment, that's a great moment.
Clint Dempsey's arrival as an analyst,
yes,
and maybe you know what? Maybe give it to the whole team. Maybe give it to the whole Paramount Plus CBS.
The NBA on TBS team at CBS Sports.
Those guys, the Deuce, Gooch, Moa Duke, Charlie Davies, the Vibes. They did you see the?
Give it up to Michael Richards too.
I know. Did you see? You watch the whole thing? Did you watch the whole thing?
Oh, the arm wrestle.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, did you see Juch look at the TV like it was George Borghetti? He looked at the camera like it was George Borghetti at the end of it.
But that whole thing is – okay. This should not take away from your enjoyment. You can see him crack because he – the whole, like, this thing he did when he bucked up after –
But can you imagine being a professional athlete and you don't get those moments anymore? And you get one right there, like it must bring everything back.
They have this shot, right? So it's this is we're recognizing something that's not on our list, but we have.
Would you have taken Michael Richards or Gooch beforehand?
I would have taken Gooch. I mean,
I would have taken Michael Richards. I think the dude's got swole chest, man.
He is, and I don't know if the whole thing might have been a work. I'm just gonna say that whole thing might.
You think Michael Richards is gonna take that fall?
Yeah, because I think he's that kind of dude who would have fun with it. I really do.
What I will say is Gooch got more leverage. His arms are longer.
That's a true fact. But they switched arms at one point, right? They went from right to left.
I don't know if I saw that.
They went right to left. So they ended up. I think Gooch won with his left, and they had started out on right. The whole thing got messed up with the ref. He couldn't control the room, which was part of the story. And you got this shot. So it's Gooch and Micah Richards. I think the only person on Micah Richards' side was the host of the show. What's her name? Somebody tell me. It's not going to come to me right now.
Kate Abdu
was on Micah's side. I don't think there's anybody else over there. So you have
she's the only person not American.
I know this, but what I'm saying is you have Davies, Adu, Gooch, or not Gooch, Davies, Adu, and Dempsey all on the other side.
Pumping up their boy.
At one point, I have this screenshot of Davies where his face is just stone. He's just like willing Gooch to win. And because the shot is tight enough, Dempsey's not actually in the shot most of the time. He's kind of off the screen, but
all of a sudden he's in there and he's got his sunglasses on.
He's got sunglasses on. He's wandering. He's like, "Ooh, go on, Gooch." That's a good point. That's number whatever 10A. We'll put that on the back end just to celebrate them. But number one, it could have easily been the thing that undid the entire qualifying process, right? This could have been if the U.S. failed to qualify, everybody would go back to Weston McKennie being sent home. Everybody would go back to the controversy over what he did. What did he do? Why did Berhalter send him home? He just broke quarantine. Is that it? Is that the only thing? Rumors are flying everywhere. We don't know what he did. And you know, look, again, connecting some dots, timing of that decision. Another guy was in that camp, has not been back since.
Yep.
Does that have something to do with this? I think we would be writing that story, talking about that story for the next 3 years.
When do you think we get that full story? Is it when one of these guys retires and writes a book? Is it after the World Cup? Like, when is it?
How long did it take Eric Rinaldo to tell the story of 98? How long did it take him?
A decade?
It was a decade at least.
2010 or something like that when it came out, I think.
More than a decade that it took him to tell that story. I don't think it's quite like that, obviously. But, you know.
I'll tell you. Here's when the story comes out. When John Brooks doesn't make the World Cup team and he says something. Or he tells someone. Like, that's when it comes out, maybe. I think.
It could be that. I mean, it could be that. But why did... Based on who may be at fault in this situation, I don't know why any of those people will come out and tell the story, right? Unless there's something, unless it's like, oh, ha, 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 that happened. We're all good now. So that would mean McKennie's in the team, Brooks is in the team, and they're at the World Cup celebrating something, right?
Yeah.
That's the only way that it makes sense for them to be like, let me tell you the story. You know, Berhalter has no reason.
How I Met Your Suspension. Let me tell you the story.
We've been frustrated for months and months and months about Brooks. And again, I'm not 100% sure. I cannot say with certainty that's why Brooks hasn't been in the team. It could be Berhalter.
It's only form, Jason. That's the only thing happening. It's form.
Look, maybe he's convinced himself of that. I mean, again, you don't need to look past look farther than Luca Della Torre taking as long as he did to get in this team to think that Berhalter might have different views on how a player's playing and whatever. I mean, look, okay, Derek Ritchie says the Brooks situation and McKinney are unrelated. I've heard different stories. That's fine. I've heard
how do we know? Stories. We're not there.
Right. The people I've heard the stories from, I would
just I'll say this. Know, that window was a deciding window for us because that window produced Weston McKennie with a ban from the team, a suspension from the team, and John Brooks has never recovered from that window, whether that's it's right. form, regardless play, or whatever. That regardless. Window was a pinnacle window for this U.S. team.
Well, and obviously they drew the game against Canada and went to Honduras, and that's where McKennie was not available, right? So you have to play that game. Berhalter has to make those halftime adjustments, and we already went back to that. Ricardo Pepi makes his debut with the U.S. men's national team. Berhalter puts on Aronson, Legette, and who was the other player who scored in that game that came on?
Aronson, Legette, and Roldan came on that game.
Okay, so but obviously Anthony Robinson started that game and scores the opening goal for the U.S. in the second half. So, I mean, I don't know. This is that could have been the window, could have been the moment, and it was the first one. I mean, yeah, it was the first one, right? We had barely started this whole thing, and we go into controversy almost immediately. So there it is.
Right. All right, and I know that we've got our voting segment to get to, but what if we did this, Jason? I'm going to spring this on you right now. What if we table that to next week and let the general audience vote on that? That was just the best he's got to vote idea. On that. We're at an that's hour already, and maybe we can get the full best soccer audience involved in that. We'll put it out on the Twitters and the Instagrams.
So we've got a Google form that Nick put together that's got a question about
Nick, MVP. Could you put it in the chat right now just so these folks as well?
Yeah, we'll throw it up in the chat. We'll probably tweet it out a couple times, put it on various social media platform so you can vote.
And let's bring Nick on to at least cover the categories, to cover the questions, and then we can at least cover what the questions are here, and we'll wait till next week for the results from the whole audience. Yeah. Nicky, what do you got for us, buddy?
So as far as the, I'll put the link in the, we'll include it in the show notes on the episode, possibly. At least it'll be in the YouTube notes if you're watching this after the fact on YouTube. And then the categories we've got for the voting, we've got MVP, we've got the unsung hero, the newcomer, and Jason mentioned earlier, this is basically a player who didn't have a whole lot of caps entering.
We didn't really put a number on it, right? We kind of like
put three, people. But
three. Use your judgment. Use your judgment.
Yeah.
Don't pick Pulisic.
Yeah. Right. Obviously. Yeah.
Let's see here. We had and this was Jared's contribution. He wanted to know who had the swaggiest CONCACAF qualifying for the U.S. this year. And then we had the best celebration was another one.
Yeah, there's a couple of contenders in there. I might vote for the worm. You don't know. I might vote for the worm.
Best another meme. Good one.
There's got to be some memes out there people can pull and throw our way. I know people were making all kinds of stuff off of some of this, some of the qualifying.
And then the last category we had was the best atmosphere at a U.S. venue for the World Cup qualifying.
All right. That may be for that's people who actually, one. You know, who attended some games. Look, if you want to vote on it, have somebody
watch on
television.
Your TV environment. Sure. Like, which one sounded the best to you on TV?
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't really throw this in, but Jared did want to kind of, this is not a moment, I'm not sure it even makes sense to put it on our list, but we did want to recognize all the people who were traveling to U.S. games through the qualifying process, who were talking about their travel and sharing tips and getting together on our Slack, because that's been the fun thing. I got to go to one match. I got to go to the Austin match against Jamaica. So I didn't get a chance to get out there very much. I know, Jared, you didn't get to any matches during this qualifying cycle. So for us,
do a friendly out here in California, though. That's what I'm
living through
for.
Those people was very cool. Lots of people sharing their experiences and their pictures and their food.
Man, some of them, their homes, some people crashed with people and stuff. Like it was a cool environment. So Besties Travels Slack channel is just full of people making plans together, trying to do a meetup, trying to get together, sharing where if it's their hometown, hey, eat here, stay here, like giving them tips on like how to best travel around to these venues. And the Mexico City travel was mind boggling to me. Like the people that went down there and got together down there, that's just really cool things. What it makes our community so great.
Yeah. So a little love for those people. Again, if you want to join up to the Patreon and get involved in the Slack, you can do that at patreon.com/thebestsoccershow. What else is on our
agenda? Do you want to squeeze in a call before we go?
Do we have one?
We have one for Harry from New York that just came in. Maybe he's got something to tie us all together.
Okay, so we want to go back and talk about the draw for the World Cup. Harry, I think you're on the air. What's up, Harry?
Hey, yes, I am. I can hear you guys. All right, here's my thinking. In terms of the easiest path to go through a World Cup is you want to go through it with as least points as possible, meaning you only need 4 points. So I'm looking at our group, and I think it's probably the most difficult group because all four teams are, you know, provided Wales go through. They're in the top 20 FIFA. So, and then we have a pot A group that could potentially drop points. Because if you remember England in the Euros, they dropped a point in the group. So I don't know if 4 points is going to be good enough.
Agreed.
And yeah, I'd rather be in another group with, I'll take pot A getting 9 points any day of the week and an easier pot four. Basically, I don't think we're going to get, I don't think four might not be good enough. So that's why I'm a little trepidatious about this.
Well, I mean, look, again,
traditionally, four has been enough, but sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not. No. Yeah. It's also worth pointing out, and I'm not getting ahead of myself, right? Because it's got to win the games in the group, or you got to get points in the group to get out of the group. But the way this sets up is you will get group B gets group A in the round of 16 when you get through. So if the U.S. wins the group, I'm not saying they will, but if they win the group, that means they're going to get the winner of Group A, which is Qatar, Ecuador, Senegal, and the Netherlands. So,
If they win the group, they don't get the top team for that.
No, sorry. If they win the group, they get the second place team. Yeah. If they finish second, they get the top team. You're right. So, but my point is,
Senegal. What do you think?
Group A is weirdly balanced too, right? Look, Qatar could get out because they're the home team, and the home team traditionally gets out of the group. South Africa is the only one that's ever done it. I believe only team that's never that hasn't got out of the group in the history of the World Cup, at least modern era. Ecuador, I don't think anybody really thinks a lot of Ecuador, but they're qualifying out of South America, so you know, give them credit for that. The Dutch, who knows what the Dutch are going to look? That's a very talented team, right? On paper, they're the best team in the
group. You've got to expect the Dutch to qualify first out of that group, though.
Probably, but the stranger things have happened, right?
So, but I agree with Mike. Harry. I think four points may not be enough in this group. I mean, five probably gets you through, almost assuredly.
Remember, Iran tied Portugal last World Cup and almost beat Spain. I mean, it's not a cakewalk. I'd rather be in another group with a fourth. Yeah.
Well, so here's what scares me. Here's what scares me about the. So I don't know necessarily what to expect out of the first game. I think, you know, Wales is the most dangerous team on paper. I think no matter if you get Ukraine or Scotland, it's going to be a tough game. I kind of feel like that's going to be a toe-to-toe kind of game. Both teams are going to want to set the pace. Both teams are going to want possession. It's kind of going to be a battle in that regard. Against England, the U.S. is not going to have the majority of the ball against England. I just don't think that's going to happen. So you are forced to play on the back foot a little bit more, on the counterattack a little bit more, taking advantage of the space, being aggressive when you do get your opportunities. I wonder how pressing is going to affect that game. And against Iran, as good as Iran has been, and they were good at the World Cup last time, or good enough to scare some teams last time, and they are top of Asian qualifying. Do not forget that.
Yeah.
They're not going to want the ball. That's just the way they play. So you are now forced as the U.S. to break down a low block. And we know that that's been a problem, right? That's been an issue for the United States, is that that's the next step for Berhalter. Figure out how to get this team to break down a low block, because if there is not space, the U.S. is in trouble breaking it. Canada's a perfect example. That's a long time ago in terms of the more recent qualifier is indicative of this, although I'm not sure how you judge that with the early lead. But they couldn't break the Canadians down when they needed to find a goal.
Yeah, and I appreciate the call, Harry. I think Nick wants us to get to one last caller. He said he wants us to get to Will from Lancaster as well.
Okay, well, then let's do that. Let me see if I can bring up Will. Will from Lancaster. Lancaster, what's up, Will?
Lancaster, what's up, guys? Are you guys ready?
Yeah, what?
Ready for what?
What are we ready for? Yeah, what? Go.
We are going to Qatar. We are going to Qatar. We are going to Qatar.
Cutter.
Come on, sing it. We are going to Qatar.
That's chanting. That's not singing.
We are going to Qatar.
And not as a playoff team.
I love you guys.
You have to. Thanks for the call, Will. You have to say it that way and not the other, maybe correct way, in order for that to work. You can't say we are going to Qatar because it doesn't work. Right? You have to say Qatar.
Why do you have to make everything fun unfun?
No, I'm not trying to. I'm just pointing out that that's why we're leaning into that. How am I making it unfun? I sang. You didn't sing.
I did too. Review the tape.
No, you went like.
Take it to VAR. Take it to VAR.
Is that what you call singing? I feel bad for your kid.
I was so harmonized, you didn't even notice.
All right. That's it. A couple of calls to finish out the show. That's good. All right. Anything else that we should get to before we get out of here?
I just remember, guys, go give us your answers to the questions that we posed. We'll give you guys the full week, and next week we'll cover and see what you guys said.
There you go. Go take the poll. That's it. We're going to get out of here. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Jay Rodius.